From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Being heard all across America and every state across the country, you are part of a growing number of spiritually active, governance-engaged individuals who are tuning in to Washington Watch to get your news from a biblical perspective. I'm your host today, Jody Heiss, a senior vice president here at Family Research Council and the president of FRC Action. We are honored to have you on board with us. All right, coming up on today's program, Vice President Kamala Harris and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz will be holding a rally later tonight in Arizona for their presidential campaign. And according to the campaign team, one of the things that the duo will be highlighting is the vice president's leadership to secure the southern border. Wow. I'm not sure how in the world they plan to pull that off, considering all that we've seen coming across the border. I mean, record numbers of illegal immigrants, military-aged men with terrorist ties. They're individuals with criminal records, gang affiliations. And then, of course, the drug problems, the fentanyl that has been devastating more and more American communities every single day.
It's only a matter of time before it's somebody in your family that dies of fentanyl. That's right. Or maybe one of your daughters gets raped and murdered by an MS-13 gang member that's not supposed to be here. Well, now you've got the task of trying to make Kamala Harris seem like some superstar. I know it's a mountainous task, and I know she's going to be out here in Arizona this week. She probably won't go to the border because she never has.
Well, that was Arizona Congressman Eli Crane yesterday speaking to the media at a press briefing, and he'll be joining me in just a moment to respond to what the Harris-Walz campaign will be calling a highlight. And the other thing that Harris and Walz plan to highlight is, surprise, you guessed it, abortion. The number of which, by the way, has seen a disturbing rise, at least according to some newly released estimates. And we're going to be discussing those figures and what to make of them when I'm joined a little bit later in the program by Dr. Michael New from the Charlotte Lozier Institute. And speaking of abortion, Kamala Harris's running mate is being labeled an abortion fanatic, among other things. And wait until you learn more about the church he attends. I can assure you that might explain why he has a serious misunderstanding of the golden rule, which he seems to think makes it okay for advocating abortions.
We respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own business.
Quite a bizarre take on the golden rule. And even more so, even though he said it wrong, he didn't even state the golden rule, but what he stated as the golden rule, when you consider that's coming from someone who set up a COVID-19 hotline for Minnesotans to snitch on their neighbors who are suspected of violating lockdown mandates. Wow. Well, at any rate, we'll be diving more into this when I'm joined by FRC's David Clawson for our weekly worldview discussion. Also coming up on today's program, we'll discuss the pushback against DEI initiatives in corporate America, as well as the military, when I'm joined by Matt Lohmeyer from STARS. That is an organization for Stand Together Against Racism and Radicalism in the Services. So as always, we've got a lot coming your way, a packed program. And of course, if you miss any portion of it, you can catch it by going to our website, tonyperkins.com, where you can find not only this edition of Washington Watch, but also other editions as well there in the archive. And, of course, tons of resources available there for you as well. So be sure to bookmark that webpage, tonyperkins.com. And don't forget, before we jump into the details tonight, our team is hard at work, the team at iVoter Guide, to finalize the iVoter Guide for national, state, and many local elections. I've already, yesterday and today, been getting some updates on the iVoter Guide and what's going on. If you would like to receive the iVoter Guide and before it's out, be getting updates about it, you can do so by texting the word guide, G-U-I-D-E, text the word guide to 67742, and you'll be able to keep those updates. All right, now let's get into our first topic for the day. Ahead of the Harris-Waltz visit that, as I mentioned, is going to be taking place in Arizona a little bit later today, the campaign team for the Democrats' presidential ticket said that the duo is going to be highlighting the stakes of the race for reproductive rights and the vice president's leadership to secure the border. Well, while abortion certainly is expected to be a talking point for Harris and Waltz, how can they possibly tout Harris's dismal record on the border? The borders are. How in the world can the dismal record there be considered a highlight? Well, joining me now to set the record straight is a congressman from Arizona, Eli Crane. He serves on three House committees, including the Homeland Security Committee, as well as Veterans Affairs. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Arizona. Congressman Crane, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you, my friend. Congressman, not able to hear you. All right, stand by. All right, can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
All right, we've got you. All right, great to have you on the program, Congressman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, well, you just got back from the southern border earlier this week. Can you tell us about that visit, what you heard, and what you saw while you were there on the ground?
Yeah, well, unlike Kamala Harris and the Democrats, Jody, I do believe it's important that if an issue is going to be important to you, you've got to get there on the ground and you've got to go check it out. And so that's what I did on Tuesday this week. Thanks to the guys at Pinal County Sheriff's Office for taking me up in their helicopter, taking me down to Sassipee, and then we flew down to Lukeville and back. We spent about 4 hours in the air. Honestly, we didn't see any massive groups, Jody, on that section of the border. But one of the things that we did see is we helped Border Patrol chase down a car that was trying to evade law enforcement. And then we helped them try and track the individuals that had fled from the car. And that's, you know, something that these guys deal with each and every day. So I always cherish the time I get to spend with those guys. And I always learn a ton every time I'm up there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been with those guys myself, but I must say I've never had the helicopter tour. That has got to be a pretty spectacular event right there. So, I mean, look, we all know, Congressman, the horrible, devastating, frightening numbers of individuals and the type of individuals that have been crossing our borders for 3.5 years now. And Kamala Harris now is wanting to, and their campaign, wanting to somehow highlight what's happened on the border as a positive for her. What does leadership to secure the border really look like?
Well, it's quite simple, Jody. You just do the exact opposite of what the Democrats are doing. You go back to what President Trump had done, and I think done very well within the 4 years that he had. But first and foremost, you actually have to care about it. And let's be honest, the only reason that Kamala Harris can act like she's a champion on the border is because her voters watch CNN, MSNBC, and media outlets that, you know, pour pure propaganda into the brains and the eyes of Democrat voters who, even though their minds, you know that, you know, the United States of America isn't as safe as it was, you know, they're entranced by a bunch of propaganda. And so we have to go back to doing what we were doing under the Trump administration. That's step one.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's still stunning to me and frightening. I mean, we have so many people in this country right now, and communities, families are being devastated by it all. I am encouraged that although Congress is in recess right now, but nonetheless, I'm encouraged that House Republicans have been and continue to be very active in sounding the alarm regarding the southern border. I know the Judiciary Committee has released a couple of reports including one that highlighted some criminal activity of an illegal alien who the Biden-Harris administration released into the U.S. without any legal justification for doing so. So as all these investigations from House Republicans and various committees are taking place, what do you hope is going to come from all of this?
Well, I'd be lying to you, Jody, if I had high hopes for Congress doing anything about the southern border, before the election. The real chance, in my opinion, and obviously I'm talking as a freshman here, but in my opinion, the chance to do something about it is long gone. And the only way we could have done something about the border, in my opinion, is if we would have been willing to shut down the government. And I know that, you know, that has all sorts of negative connotation with it. And, you know, everybody gets obviously scared when we talk about it. But because we only control one body of the federal government, you know, the only way we could have done it, in my opinion, is if we would have tied funding of this administration to closing the border down. And then it would have got into, you know, a contest between Chuck Schumer, Mike Johnson and Joe Biden to see who could outlast each other to, you know, actually get their policies in place, which would have ended up in a government shutdown. And unfortunately, that's the way this town works. It comes down to who can actually, take the most pain and who can win the narrative with the American people. And so that's why shows like this are so important. That's why people that listen to your show are so important, because when you only control one chamber, you have to be willing to play hardball. And we were not willing to play hardball to secure that border.
Very good point. And we all remember that battle vividly. I think there is some hope as a new election, if a new administration comes in, that there will be greater emphasis on the border. But as things currently stand, I agree, it's a difficult task for sure. All right, let me final question. You, of course, Navy SEAL, you've served our country so well during 13 years of your military service. You were involved in 5 wartime deployments as a Navy SEAL. SEAL Team 3. What's your take on all the discussions regarding Governor Wall's service-related claims?
And just to correct the record real quick, I had 3 deployments at SEAL Team 3, 5 total in the Navy, 2 on a ship. But, it's disappointing when I see, Mr. Wall talking about his his combat experience when everybody knows that he was never in combat. You know, one of the quotes that I saw in a speech that he gave, he said he was talking about taking away weapons of war and infringing on our Second Amendment. And one of the things he said was that he was going to take weapons, the same weapons of war that he carried in war, away from American citizens. And, you know, the guy deployed to Italy. And so, you know, it's par for the course, Jody. And as you know, he'll fit in really well in Washington with people that constantly lie and misrepresent. My biggest concern with Mr. Walz and the Democrat nominee for president is how cozy they are with socialism. And I think, that's where the Democrat Party is headed if we don't win this election.
Absolutely. Totally agree with you. And that cozying up to socialism is something that needs to be exposed. Hope to have you back on the program to talk further about that in the future. Congressman Eli Crane of Arizona, thank you so much for joining us. An honor to have you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, friends, don't go anywhere. We've got much more Washington Watch coming your way straight ahead. So we'll be back right after this break. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com. www.thegoldenrule.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, and an honor to be with you. All right, a lot of companies in corporate America have had to make some changes to their DEI initiatives. Much of that has come from growing backlash from the public. But there's also cases that have made their way through the courts over claims that these type of initiatives actually promote discrimination in the workplace. But some of these companies continue to plow ahead. One, for example, Delta Airlines, where the chief DEI officer has come out boldly saying that they're going to boldly pursue equity. And then there's the Department of Defense, which actually was called out late last month by House Republicans for its efforts to literally indoctrinate our service members' children with far-left DEI propaganda. So is the tide turning on DEI? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Matt Lohmeyer, Executive Vice President of STARS, which is Stand Together Against Racism and Radicalism in Services. He was a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Air Force and Space Force before being relieved of his command for publishing and speaking about his book, Irresistible Revolution, which encouraged senior military leaders to abandon the divisive and politicization of military workforce, DEI there. So, Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jody.
Okay, so, look, I know your focus, and powerfully so, is the armed services, but I'd like to just first get your thoughts on what I opened up with as we've seen corporate America continue pushing DEI, while some have experienced a pretty significant backlash. What's your overall perspective of that?
Yeah, you asked a good question. Are we making any headway? Is the tide turning? And as we approach both the presidential election season, people are paying far more attention to these issues than ever before. But I'm encouraged some days of the week when I see news headlines saying or suggesting that certain businesses or corporations are abandoning their DEI initiatives, or at least they're backing off from aggressively pursuing those initiatives. And every time I get encouraged, it seems like one or two institutions have backed away from it, or businesses have, and two or three more have just doubled down their efforts and dug in their heels even more aggressively. And so there's no doubt about it, there continues to be a fracturing influence of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, even through corporate America. And you're right, I've been nearly exclusively focused on the impacts that these initiatives are having to our troops in the services.
Yeah, and I want to get to that, and I didn't want to derail you because I know that's where your focus is, and we're all grateful for that. But it is interesting that this is, you know, you look at Delta Airlines, for example. I don't know that there's another airline that flies more service members than does Delta Airlines. Mm-hmm. It seems like every time I'm there, it does. So there's a connection with so right. much of between the military and many of these in corporate mm-hmm. America. So the spillover in all of this ties together. And you're right. I mean, we've seen a lot of DEI officers have found their positions on the chopping blocks. Hopefully there'll be more of that along the way.
Yeah.
Well, let's turn to the military. Tell us what you've been seeing in the military, DEI initiatives. What's happening? What kind of impact is it having?
There is a growing influence, and it's a negative influence, in the Defense Department ever since this administration came to office. Whereas President Trump in September of 2020, through executive order, abandoned altogether and made illegal diversity, equity, and inclusion trainings involving critical race theory vocabulary. This administration on January 20th, by executive order, brought all of that training back with a bang. And of course, he has a friend to these initiatives in the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. We've had a friend to these initiatives in the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Mark Milley, and now the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General C.Q. Brown, who is formerly the chief of staff of the Air Force. All of these senior leaders buy into this policy that's been established by this administration, and it has found its way into every branch of the military, in all of the military workplaces to a lesser or a greater degree, and now into our military service academies across all of the service academies. And we get reports at STARS from active duty service members who are in the military workplace and from young cadets at these service academies leaking training slides to us, for example, at the Air Force Academy, saying that they shouldn't be using terms such as mom and dad, which is absurd to the American mind and to your common American. But it's offensive to these service members who signed up thinking that they were doing a noble service to their country and getting trained to be leaders and future officers in the United States military, to be bombarded with this propaganda and rhetoric that is so divisive. And so what I've seen up until this point is quite divisive. It's hurting our recruiting and retention efforts, as everyone has seen, and it's not yet gone away. So this presidential election, in fact, and I'm speaking personally and not for STARS when I say this, is as critical as of an election as we've ever had before. And of course, I work for a nonprofit. We stay out of the politics of all of this, but all of the American people know that every aspect of this has been highly politicized, and we need to remove that highly politicized influence from the uniformed services so our troops can be united once again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is totally one thing for corporations to focus on DEI and lose profits and lose customers, but it isn't an entirely different matter when the military focuses on DEI. The consequences there are much more significant than just losing customers or profit, right?
Yeah, in fact, you could see this in the operating room as a great example. You don't want the medical profession or industry being de-emphasizing merit and getting a surgeon in there based on the color of their skin or their ethnicity or their religious background, of course, and those things are illegal. All the more so in the United States military, where lethality matters, where a very particular mission set matters. You don't need pilots or tank drivers or pick your career field. I was a space-based missile warning operator and commander. You don't want to de-emphasize merit and sacrifice merit for the purpose of establishing race quotas or pursuing race quotas. We had a spokesperson for the Department of the Air Force say they wanted to reduce the number of white pilots in the Air Force down to 67.5% because historically we've had too many white pilots. Now, the American people think when they hear that, well, were they good pilots or were they bad pilots? What's the problem here? But there is a minority, and I don't mean racially, a minority of the population that does in fact buy into this idea that diversity means pursuing race quotas. And when you do that in the military, you lose lethality.
You got trouble. All right, Matt, we're out of time. I'm so sorry. I'd love to get you in. One word answer. Is there hope? Are we going to see some change, you think?
There is hope. Have me back on to discuss how that's possible.
Okay.
But folks can visit stars.us.
We'll All right, friends, stay tuned. Much more Washington Watch straight ahead.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. All right, earlier this week, the Society of Family Planning released some new abortion estimates that covered the first 3 months of 2024. It was part of their hashtag WeCount project. But among the trends that were analyzed in the report, it showed a disturbing rise in so-called telehealth abortions. And, you know, that's disturbing enough, but what else was in the report that, and what can be trusted in that report? Well, here to break down the numbers is Dr. Michael New, who is the associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. New, welcome to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
All right. So what is the abortion data that the Association of Family Planning is reporting?
Sure. Every so often, they come out with abortion estimates. They do a survey. It's not a comprehensive count. And they reported that abortions went up during the first 3 months of 2024. They report about a 13% increase. I think there's some reason to be a bit skeptical. Prior to 2022, this organization had never done any U.S. abortion estimates. Another group, the Guttmacher Institute, also does abortion estimates. Sometimes there are disparities between their numbers and Guttmacher's. And also, it's only relatively recently that Society for Family Planning has started counting these telehealth abortions. So I think that's inflating the numbers a little bit. So again, I think there's reasons to be concerned, but I also don't think there's reasons for despair either.
Okay, before we go on, let's define what we're talking about with telehealth abortions.
Sure, that there are, you know, states where, you know, doctors can interface with a woman seeking an abortion through Zoom or some other electronic means. And after this online appointment, they can sell them or send them chemical abortion pills through the mail. So that means, you know, a woman is obtaining a chemical abortion without an in-person medical exam. I think right. This is, you know, fatal for unborn children, but terrible public health. If a woman is in a ectopic pregnancy, takes an abortion, that can be fatal. So it's really, you know, horrible public health and horrible public policy.
Absolutely. And I wanted that definition to be clear, because after the Dobbs decision came down, there were many conservatives that have been saying that abortion is now solely a state's issue. But the left certainly doesn't think of it that way. They see this as a national level issue, and thereby these chemical abortion pills are being sent even into red states that have protections for abortion and overriding the laws. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That unfortunately, about six politically liberal states have what are known as shield laws. And these shield laws protect medical professionals who would go ahead and send these chemical abortion pills into pro-life states or into states with pro-life laws. So, again, you know, the other side does not view this as a state issue. You know, they're trying to nationalize the issue. Again, many politically liberal states are effectively exporting abortion. They're passing laws that would protect legally, you know, medical professionals who do send these dangerous chemical abortion drugs into states that have pro-life laws.
Dr. New, I think that is so important for our viewers and listeners to hear. I know for a fact when I was in Congress, when the Dobbs decision came down, that was immediately the message that was being sent, at least through the Republican Party, that, you know, Roe v. Wade has been overturned. Now it's a state issue. And so everyone, I mean, the buzz was it's a state issue. It's a state issue. For some, they have kept that mentality. I certainly have not, because I see that, number one, it's not strictly a state issue. But number two, the Democrats certainly don't look at it that way. And what we're discussing right now is absolute evidence of that. We have to understand this is an issue that goes far beyond the state. Certainly the states are huge in this battle, but it goes far, far beyond that. So what's the good news in the midst of the data, at least from your perspective? Is there any good news?
Well, essentially, you know, abortions have quit being performed by and large in many of those states that have strong pro-life laws in place. There's about 14 states right now that protect all pre-born children, and the number of abortions there are zero or very close to it. And we do have a good, like, birth data from a lot of states that have passed strong pro-life laws. There's three studies looking at Texas birth data, which shows that the Texas Heartbeat Act has actually saved 1,000 babies every month. So one thing I tell pro-life audiences is that, you know, abortions are often hard to count because women go out of state, you know, they go to other countries, but babies are easy to count. And if more children are being born, you know, that's very powerful evidence that these pro-life laws are having an impact and are saving lives. So the laws that we are passing are still doing some good.
That's really a good point. Is there any place to get accurate counts? You know, we hear all these types of things. Is it even possible to get an accurate account?
I think that it's going to be a lot more difficult, especially with these telehealth abortions. They're unregulated, and I think that some of the companies that send these abortion pills through the mail have incentives to inflate their numbers. I think the analysts who are really interested in the instance of abortion need to look at birth data. You know, the government doesn't do a lot of things well, but it can count the number of babies being born. And we have good data from Texas, good data from other states that have strong pro-life laws, that more babies are, in fact, being born. So I think counting abortions is going to be tough, but the birth data does provide powerful evidence that our pro-life laws are saving lives and are building a culture of life and are doing a lot of good.
Thank you, Dr. Michael New. Great information. We appreciate so much you breaking down all of this and for all the work that you do at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Greatly appreciate it. Thanks for joining us today.
Appreciate it.
All right, friends, after the break, we're going to close our week with our weekly worldview discussion with FRC's David Clawson. We're going to be looking at Kamala Harris's running mate from a biblical perspective. And trust me, there is a lot of information there to talk about. We mentioned one with the Golden Rule a while ago, but we're going to go much deeper than that. So you don't want to go anywhere. Stay tuned. Much more Washington Watch coming your way on the other side of the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch, and happy Friday to you. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, and thank you for being a part of the program today. And just a reminder, we do have a petition out. The purpose of the petition is to urge President Biden and the presidential candidates, all of them, urge them to support Israel. We'd ask you to help us and sign the petition. You can do so by going to frcaction.org/support, or you can simply text the word support to 67742. They need to hear from the American people that we want to know where they stand on Israel. And mentioning that, if you or someone you know is wondering why in the world should we be praying for Israel? Why should we be standing for Israel? Why is it such a big deal? Well, Tony has a brand new resource out for you. It's entitled, Why We Must Pray For and Stand With Israel. We want to get this resource into your hands. We've got a digital copy that we will send your way with any gift size to FRC. So to learn more, to get your digital copy of this great resource, simply text the word Israel to 67742. All right. It has, how do you describe it? It's been yet another whirlwind of a week, even with Congress out on recess. What a week. Vice President Kamala Harris announced Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate on Tuesday. There's been obviously abundant coverage and scrutiny about that and the various details of his life, his military career, his time in public service, and on and on and on. But as we kind of look at this through the lens of Scripture, what do we need to consider as we comb through it all? And again, specifically from a biblical perspective. Well, joining me now for this discussion is David Clawson. He's the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council. David, it's always an honor to have you. Thanks for joining me today.
Great to be with you, Jody.
All right, so let's start. The dust has been flying all week. The whirlwind is all over the place. Let's try to get some of the dust to settle. Let's begin. Let me just get your take on Kamala Harris's choice of Tim Walz to serve as her running mate.
Yeah, Jody, frankly, I was quite surprised. I think in the lead up to the announcement earlier this week, all, you know, indicators were that she would go with Josh Shapiro, who's the very popular governor of Pennsylvania. And I think when you're trying to figure out how to get to 270 electoral votes, most of those maps require Pennsylvania. It's kind of the ultimate swing state. So it seemed like a politically savvy choice. But going with Tim Walz, and it's interesting, Jody, to see the coverage, you know, kind of glowing coverage of this, you know, this folksy, hometown, happy warrior kind of guy. But when you actually look at his record as both a governor and congressman, he's actually incredibly liberal. I'll just start our conversation off with this, Jody. I went back actually into the archives, the FRC Action Archives, going back to 2007 when he was a congressman. And the high water mark for then Congressman Walz as far as voting on with FRC, you know, we put out a scorecard every year on issues related to family, religious freedom, sexuality, abortion. He voted with us 11% of the time from 2007 to 2008. That was the high water mark. For the next 8 years, he got a big goose egg. 0% of the time he voted with FRC Action. And actually, his final term in Congress, which would have been the 115th Congress, Jody, he voted with us once. And what's actually incredible about that is it was a mistake. And I wish I could tell you his incompetence in voting the wrong way was his worst trait. But he actually accidentally voted for the Born Alive Survivor Protection Act, legislation that would provide protections for babies who survive botched abortions. He accidentally voted for it and the next day publicly apologized for it and filed something in the congressional record saying that if he could do it over again, he'd actually vote against that bill. So again, he's actually incredibly liberal, Jody.
Yeah, that's quite an understatement. You know, you mentioned specifically his position, his stance on abortion. And quite frankly, this has not received a whole lot of reporting, but he was one of the first governors, if I'm not mistaken, to sign an expansive abortion bill after Roe v. Wade was overturned. What does this law that he signed reveal about not just abortion, but his worldview?
Yeah, and again, that's so important to look at someone's record and to compare it to scripture. You know, the issue of abortion, the dignity of human life, this is not an issue where there's two sides from a Christian perspective. God has spoken on this issue. Every person, born and unborn, has inherent value and dignity. This is why this is such a pressing concern for Christians. And Jody, I kind of went into the archive to see how now governor, but then Congressman Walz voted on this issue. And again, it shows that he's one of the most energetic supporters of abortion that we've seen in recent memory. I just pulled up the record. And going back to 2011, he voted twice to continue funding for Planned Parenthood. In 2012, he voted against a ban against sex-selective abortion. In 2013, 15, and 17, he voted against the pain-capable Unborn Child Protection Act, legislation that says when a baby in the womb can feel pain, that abortion should be illegal. He voted against that three times. And then again, in 2018, voting against the Born Alive Survivor Protection Act. But what you just referenced, Jody, so important. Minnesota, under his leadership, was the first state after Roe v. Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court to advance a really, really progressive, liberal abortion law. It was actually the first item that the legislature there in Minnesota pushed through. And Republicans actually tried to water it down to offer some amendments. They were all shot down. And after he signed that legislation, Jody, you can now get a legal abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy in Minnesota. But what's even worse last year, Jody, well, I don't know if you can say it's worse, but it just shows that he's, again, an energetic supporter. He stripped from 2006 until last year, there was a state-level grant that gave money to crisis pregnancy centers. As soon as that was brought to the governor's attention, he made sure that they were stripped of all of that money. And then he also realized that the state had a Born Alive Survivor Protection Act at the state level, and he made sure to weaken that significantly. And so this is regrettable, Jody. I think this is something we should be mourning. But whenever Governor Walz has had an opportunity to weigh in on the abortion issue, he has gone with the most liberal impulses of his party. And I think it's not being reported, so I'm glad we're covering it on Washington Watch. But again, this is one of the most ardent supporters of abortion we've seen on the national stage.
Yeah, and that's all. It seems like it was all that Vice President Harris could talk about for her time as vice president. Everywhere she went, all she could talk about was abortion, abortion, abortion. And now she brings as her vice president running mate someone who might be even more a fanatic on abortion as she is. It's unbelievable. I do want to play a clip for you. It kind of hits it's in the context of abortion while he was on the campaign trail. But it even goes beyond this. Play clip two for me.
We respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own business.
Yeah, and that was bleeped out because there was some cursing in there. But basically, it's saying the golden rule, just mind your own business. Your response to this line of campaign speech, if we can call it that.
Well, Jody, he doesn't actually believe that. During COVID, this is a governor who imposed an indoor mask mandate. He had some of the most stringent COVID policies anywhere in the country. They rivaled what Gavin Newsom was doing in California. This is also the same governor who promoted a hotline during COVID, or he encouraged Minnesotans, if they thought their neighbors were not abiding by COVID protocols, that they could report them to the authorities. And so this idea that he's promoting this, you know, golden rule of mind your own business, well, my goodness, again, COVID-19 that's not ancient history. He has a record that we can look at, and he doesn't really believe that. But again, the kind of the sacrament of the Democrat Party has become abortion. And one thing I'll add, Jody, you know, when Kamala Harris made history as the first president or vice president to visit an abortion clinic, you know where she did that? She did it in Minnesota. And if you go back and look at that archive footage, guess who was right by her side? Her now running mate.
Wow. Yeah, actually, what you brought up about the whole COVID deal, I actually referred to that just a little while ago. We played that clip early as we were introducing the program, and I made virtually the same comment you made. Here was a guy who says, mind your own business, but he was having Minnesotans snitch on other Minnesotans for not abiding by the mandates that unbelievable. All right, let's transition. The governor's stance on LGBTQ type issues. Where does he stand on all this?
Yeah, and again, Jerry, this is an issue that Christians care about because, again, out of love of our neighbor, we believe that the Bible has clear guidance on this. We believe that there's a moral order to the universe. And again, that's one of the reasons Christians have cared so deeply about the order of the family and marriage and sexuality. And what's interesting is Tim Walz once again appears to kind of be ahead of the curve as far as being liberal on this issue. In 1999, when he was then a high school teacher and a coach, he was a faculty member who sponsored what was then known as the Gay Straight Alliance at his school. So again, before this was even really a matter of the headlines or the news, he was really out on kind of out leading the charge on what we now would call kind of the LGBT revolution. As a member of Congress, Jody, I know you have voted multiple times against the Equality Act, legislation that would codify sexual orientation, gender identity at the level of protected class, and actually say that whenever religious liberty comes into conflict with these contested claims of gender identity, that it would trump religious freedom, that exempts itself from the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. He was an original co-sponsor on that legislation. This probably won't surprise folks, but he voted against DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. He voted against the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And one thing I'll point out from his record as a governor last year, this might be the most problematic thing, Jody, is that he actually signed into law legislation that allows a court in Minnesota to temporarily take custody of a child if that child's parents refuse to provide so-called gender-affirming care. Opponents of this bill, I think, rightfully call it the kidnapping bill. And he, again, energetically signed this into legislation. Again, Jody, This is legislation, laws, policies that we're talking about. But this emanates from a worldview. This emanates from a way of looking at the world. And I think this is emblematic, this legislation, of how he sees the world.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring it up too. It has been known as, and I refer to it as, the kidnapping bill. Here's the government kidnapping people's children if the parents don't want their kids to be involved in this transgender mutilating outcome for their lives, that the government can come and kidnap the children. This is so far outside the mainstream. What does this tell us about his worldview? What does it tell us about the people who surround him, who he listens to? Is there something that we can learn from all of this?
Well, I think so, Jody. And again, it shows kind of, again, the Christian principle of subsidiarity tells us that a parent in a household have the authority over the children and have the responsibility to discipleship and rear them up, that a parent knows what's best for their child. And the fact that Governor Walz and the people around him in Minnesota, you know, not only thought this was a good idea, but put the full weight of a public relations campaign behind it, got it through the legislature there in Minnesota, and then had a public bill ceremony, it shows that their view is that they think they know what's better for children than parents. And they also understand, Jody, that these contested claims of sexual orientation and gender identity, if a child is confused, suffering from gender dysphoria, they think they know a better prescription and a better solution than the parent does, or even really most of the medical community.
Yep. And that's frightening. I mean, government knows better than you know as parents. This is probably time for one more question. But I, being a former pastor before going to Congress, the media is ignoring this. One of our Washington Stan reporters, Joshua Arnold, has done some extensive study on the church background of Governor Walz. Can you, in about a minute, fill us in on what his church life is like?
Yeah, no surprise. He goes to a very theologically liberal church. It's called Pilgrim Lutheran. It's part of a theologically liberal denomination that actually on their website talks about how the reason this church separated from the more conservative denomination was because they didn't agree with the concept of inerrancy, the idea that the Bible is without errors. This church, you can see it on the website. They use feminine pronouns to refer to God when they pray the Lord's Prayer. They have an LGBT alliance, completely affirming the whole, you know, transgender, bisexual, lesbian, gay movement. And so, you know, I'm not surprised seeing the kinds of policies that Governor Walz has pursued. No surprise that he belongs to a theologically liberal denomination that has deviated from 2,000 years of Christian history and biblical interpretation on a whole host of issues.
Wow. David Clawson, always great to have you for these Biblical Worldview segments. I appreciate it a great deal. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jody. God bless.
God bless you as well. All right, friends, that wraps up another edition of Washington Watch in another week. Let me tell you, pastors, speak the truth. For those pastors tuning in, speak the truth. For those of you who are not pastors but believers, be in church this Sunday and speak the truth. Live out loud what you believe. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. Hope you have a fantastic weekend, and we will look forward to being with you again next week right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.